Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. I am Fred, here with Tyler, and we're going to be talking about Dynasty now that I am no longer locked out of my house. Tyler, how's it going?
Pretty good. It's a busy time of year for me with the NFL draft stuff, but man, I am excited to be here. I'm excited to talk more about this awesome show, which really helped me kind of escape a little bit from everything else that was going on. So yeah, I'm stoked, man.
So we had a great pay-per-view on Sunday with Dynasty. We had a nine-match main show along with a pre-show, which I did not watch. But we got to hit a couple of news notes first. Let's talk about the Ricochet Leon Slater drama. And I guess that also extends to the MJF Nick Nemeth match. Or Nemeth, I should say. Carlos Silva, the head of TNA, decided to do some stuff. Basically, there were two big AEW TNA matches coming up. The Mark Hitchcock Memorial Show, which is part of WrestleMania Week, of course. This week, it was advertising a main event of Ricochet versus Leon Slater, which I think was pretty much the most anticipated match on the whole slate for WrestleMania week, or at least the decent one, with basically the one of the best high flyers of all time in Ricochet pairing off against one of the great young high flyers of the day with Leon Slater. I don't know what the chances were of a proper finish to that match, because it is a pretty high ranking AEW star against a champion for TNA, but you know, they could have done a double count out or some nonsense like that. But there was also MJF defending the AEW World Championship on the May 1st Create a Pro show in Melville, New York, promoted by TNA's own Brian Myers. And then Carlos Silva said no, basically. He basically told all talent that they were not going to be able to wrestle anyone from AEW. And that is crappy. I really hate that, because we lost a great match probably for WrestleMania week, and we lost a match that MJF and Nemeth were building on social media and had a lot invested in. And also, I guess MJF was going to face Bear Bronson at Game Changer Wrestling next month, and that is also off. And then MJF went on the warpath, if you will, and started trashing Carlos Silva publicly. There is a rumor going around that TNA Carlos Silva was mad that AEW Collision went head-to-head with TNA Impact a couple times during the NCAA men's basketball tournament, which is the traditional thing. You know, it's for several years now with Collision. Turner has moved the Collision show from Saturdays to Thursday to account for that tournament. But apparently that does not move the heart of Carlos Silva. And MJF said, quote, "It's called being preempted due to March Madness. This guy," referring to Silva, "is actively a dumb motherfucker. Congrats. You pay your talent shit, then force them off shows where they can make money." Said a bunch of other stuff. It's a pretty ridiculous situation, frankly, but Also kind of not surprising given the state of American and global wrestling as a very I hate how much of it is becoming just WWE versus AEW, and it's really not going to benefit people long term.
Yeah, I have no problem in theory for a company. Hey, I don't want you wrestling wrestlers from another company. That's look, is it kind of shitty? Sure. In a vacuum, it's fine. But my big thing is this match was already agreed upon. This match was already booked. The finish was already agreed to. All parties were happy. And for seemingly a petty BS reason, one side decides to pull out. To me, that's a bunch of horseshit. Because
yeah,
it's one thing, like, look, MJF seemingly making seven figures on an AEW contract. Something happens. He's obviously the AEW world champion. Tony Khan's like, look, I hate this, but I got to pull you out. Look, we kind of get it, right? It's a different kind of situation, especially like, remember the rash of injuries that AEW had? Kenny Omega, Bryan Danielson, and their biggest stars weren't around. So I need to protect my talent. I need to protect my asset, which is AEW. I can't have my top guys going out and wrestling matches elsewhere and putting them more at risk to get hurt. If it's a situation like that, look, we hate it. We're going to criticize Tony Khan, but there's an understanding there. To me, with all the information we have, Carlos Silva's just an idiot. This isn't taking care of your talent. This isn't protecting your company. This is petty. This is dumb. Because guess what? These wrestlers aren't even on like real full-time contracts. They're not taking them off of these shows to do TNA shows. They're not doing it to protect the wrestlers. It's actively harming the wrestlers and harming the WrestleCon Super Show, harming Creative Pro, harming Maple Leaf Pro. There isn't a benefit for TNA. If there was a benefit for TNA, I could maybe understand it, like I gave with the Tony Khan instance, where if there's a rash of injuries and you want to protect your world champion from potentially getting hurt by wrestling another match, okay. I think we could all be like, yeah, this sucks, but you know what? We get it. TNA is in a no-win situation here. They're just bad. They look terrible. Leon Slater's 20, 21 years old, essentially getting to wrestle a potential dream match with Ricochet. And Nick Nemeth, he's just a guy. Like, I liked a lot of Dolph Ziggler stuff in WWE. I think he's fine in TNA at Wrestling Indies. But he's not even somebody that you're considering like a pillar of your company. Carlos Silva's just botching this hard. If you even had an inkling that you might be willing to do this, don't let them book the matches. You can just say, you can't book that match. And it's a little shitty, but nobody's going to criticize you for it like they're criticizing you for now. Just a PR nightmare for TNA, which is, well, kind of the byline of TNA's obituary when eventually it dies, which, let's be real, probably won't because it's TNA and it should have died 20 times already. Just unfortunate for everybody because Ricochet, Leon Slater would have lived up to the billing, I think, and it would have delivered at least a 4.5-star match. And probably the match of the weekend. My interesting conspiracy theory is this, Fred. WWE asked Carlos Silva to pull Leon Slater out of that Ricochet match because they knew it would overshadow WrestleMania weekend. And they knew it would be the talk of the entire wrestling world because WrestleMania doesn't look that good. And they pulled out Moose and Nick Nemeth to kind of cover their tracks. That's my conspiracy theory. No sourcing, no nothing. Just me trying to put, what does WWE like to do in these situations?
Go ahead.
That was it. That's,
oh,
that's
okay. My theory. I can't get on board with that. That's a little much, but I do think that I would not be surprised if WWE was not involved to some extent, or if this was just Carlos Silva wanting to It could just be Carlos Silva wanting to be good to WWE, given that relationship. I do think the funniest thing of all this is that TNA had a pay-per-view or a monthly show, whatever it's supposed to be called. I'm not calling it a PLE, I believe this was last Friday. And Carlos Silva, a very smart individual, decided to go in front of the crowd at the start of the show, and shock of all shocks, was booed heavily by the crowd for, all this. Incredible self goals, or own goals, I should say. Cell phones. Way to go. A+ stuff all around. Other news, really, and this is the only other real news story coming out of the Dynasty show, is that Gabe Kidd appeared to suffer a arm or shoulder injury of some sort. It has not been reported exactly what it was. I'm inclined to believe it definitely involves a dislocated shoulder, given the way that his arm was hanging kind of limply at his side. Now, the real question is, was there further damage suffered along with that? Or was it just a simple dislocation? That's going to determine how long he's out of action. But it was pretty obvious that when Kyle O'Reilly did a tope onto him during the Trios championship match on the show, that Gabe was immediately out of the match for the rest of it. And it was clear that was not a planned aspect of the match. So, bummer for him. Hopefully it is as simple of an injury as possible and he's able to get back in the ring soon. Well wishes, etc., etc. But that was a tough piece of news coming out of the show, especially considering that AEW, you mentioned the earlier period where they had like several main eventers out for injuries. It's not like top of the card guys right now, but they do seem to be on a run of suffering, like, especially on the heel side, interestingly, especially the Don Callis family, largely, but a bunch of people getting injured recently in a way that is just like seemingly one every couple weeks now at this point. You know, Kyle Fletcher recently, we had not Mark Davis, but of course the former Jake something a few weeks ago now, and so on and so forth. So this is a bummer. Hopefully Kid recovers well, but honestly, considering some of the bumps other people were taking on that show, it's probably good that it was just the one injury.
Yeah, it's not a great injury. Dislocated shoulders, like you said, kind of with damage and stuff, can linger. The one thing you really are worried about is labrum damage and then rotator cuff. You can work through a torn labrum. It's basically just torn cartilage, but it's painful. And it's probably best to just have the surgery right away before it kind of gets worse and cartilage can really get all funky. So,
yeah.
Really sucks that Gabe got hurt, but we'll see what happens. Especially because he was kind of getting into this thing where he was very anti-New Japan.
Mm. If that gets scraped, I don't know. That's going to be the worst thing, frankly. I am not. Do not put me down as a fan of that angle in New Japan, but that's a separate issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is what it is, man. But I'm excited to get to this. There really isn't a whole lot else to talk about.
No, so we'll just get to the show. Great show, I thought, from top to bottom. The main card was really, really one of the strongest pay-per-views ever, frankly. I mean, I went notebook on 8 of the 9 matches. The only one I didn't was the Trios title. And do you want to just start with the top of the show with Kenny Omega against MJF?
Nah, let's flip it, man. Let's start with the pre-show.
All right, well, that's all you.
So Alex Windsor defeats Marina Shafir, whatever, who cares? I thought Jungle Boy versus Mark Davis rocked. Like, go back and watch that match, 4, 4.25 range. Very good. Mark Davis is really developing nicely into, like, an old school brawling big man. Like, if you were to throw him in the territories at like 83, like, Mid-South, Mid-Atlantic, and then into like Jim Crockett, he just fit in like a glove. he's really figuring out how to work with attitude and intensity. And Jack Perry is kind of the perfect foil for that because he's smaller and he has to be a little bit more tactical with his offense. I recommend you actually take time to go watch out. And quite frankly, Haim and Maya World versus I can't remember what they're called. The Lena Cross and Megan Bain was very good. My only real complaint about it was both teams had two similar looking gear. So it was hard at times to tell who was who because the gear was just way too similar in color and design. Like, that bugged me a lot, but minor gripe. Very good match. I think having Cross and Bane as your tag champions rules, and I'm very intrigued to see how they get the belts off of them in time because you're going to need a team that can match them with physicality and intensity. I love having, like, for lack of a better term, like Twin Towers kind of tag teams. Like, just,
yeah,
like, big women have not really existed very much in professional wrestling. That you've had Awesome Kong, who ruled, you've had Aja Kong, but those were like heavier, not big.
Yeah.
Like, big, tall, muscular, looked like he could kill you. Megan Bain, like, has the look of, like, what you would consider, like, a Roman or Greek goddess. Like, with how just she's jacked to the gills with muscles and she could just pulverize you with her fingers. That look has been so rare in the world of women's wrestling. I love it. And Lena Cross isn't quite as built from a muscular standpoint because I think Megan Bain's close to 30. Lena Cross, I think she's only like 23, 24. So yeah, there's still young. Some time to kind of build up her physique. But I love seeing these different kind of women's wrestlers because it gives you so much more variety. Because no offense to Joshi, but Joshi, they're all, for the most part, small, slender. Yeah. You have your really tiny women who are like 90 pounds. And sometimes it's hard to believe they can pack a punch. And even the ones who are slightly bigger, they're still only like 130, 140 pounds. These women are like 200, 210, but they're not overweight. They're just jacked.
Yeah.
It's so nice. Like, that's why I like Bozilla a lot, because it's like, this is different. I remember last year, I think it's Joey Janela's spring break. Bozilla versus Megan Bain ruled. 4 stars. Two just ass-kicking bigger women. And I feel like I'm insulting them by saying that, but I'm not. It's such a different... Yeah, it's...
Like, yeah, the Jordan Grace body habitus.
Yeah, and Jordan Grace is like 5'2". These women are like 6 feet. That matters. That matters for perception. It matters for different. It matters in how you're portraying yourself. I love it. I want to see more taller, bigger, muscular women in the world of wrestling because I think it adds a different element that we've just never been able to see with any form of consistency across the top of a card. And that's where, with this women's division, there may be more talented women's divisions. Sure. Like, Stardom is on a hell of a run right now. I know you're a big Tokyo Joshi Pro fan.
Big Miyu Watanabe fan, specifically, yeah.
Yeah. When you look at what this division can do, it's kind of like 1980s, 1990s WWF, Land of the Giants. And I'm really into it because it's different. And then you have women like Tekla and Jamie Hayter who could stand up to these giants and kick ass. Alex Windsor, too. No-nonsense ass kickers who can stand toe-to-toe with the bigger women. I think it's great. It's different than anything anyone else in women's wrestling is doing right now. And I think they need to lean more and more into it. Sorry, that was a lot of time on the pre-show, but I really like this Megan Bain Lena Cross tag team. Like, it's one of my favorite.
Oh, they're cool. Yeah. Yeah. I will have to go back and watch, especially it sounds like the last two of the pre-show.
Windsor Shafir was fine. This might have been the best in-ring pre-show since that first Forbidden Door pre-show where it had like 4 matches all above like 3.5, 3.25.
Yeah.
This was really good.
So we get to the main card and kick it off with a hell of a match with the Young Bucks facing the Don Callis family, Kazuchika Okada and Konosuke Takeshita. And I love this match. I thought this was tremendously well worked by everyone. I am disappointed that VOW did not tweet out the "Are we sure the Young Bucks aren't the best tag team?" article once more, because just yet another high level match to the resume. just a fantastic team, and like I thought that the Takeshita and Okada team worked very well, unsurprisingly, given that it's two like Okada's an all-time great, obviously, and Takeshita is well on his way to establishing that kind of legacy as a younger guy. And I thought it rocked. Bucks were great baby faces. Okada is a tremendous just dirtbag heel. Him stealing the Bucks gear, one, was funny on its own, but also a fantastic little callback to that little bit of wrestling trivia / being the elite bit. It's just delightful. If you don't know, basically every time that Okada, before he jumped to AEW, every time Okada was on the same show with the Bucks after a while away, he would go steal, I think it's Matt's gear, but one of their gear, and one of the Bucks gear, and just put it on when they weren't paying attention. So great spot. I liked the ending. It was a little much, I guess. You could argue with like how long they really did the let's play it up for the you know, just in case anyone's slow, with Takeshita seemingly staring at Jackson for, you know, 20 seconds before he was like, oh, you can hit the move now. But other than that, I thought it was a smart finish. I thought it was a smart way to finally kick off this Okada Takeshita feud and get it going. But what are your thoughts on the match, Tyler?
Good, man. I liked this version of a can they coexist tag team, because it wasn't just the bullshit of, oh, they hate each other. Oh, you have those stupid BS tags where it's like, I got this. Nope, I already tagged in. Go away. It was, I hate
your guts. Well, no, he tagged me hard.
It's like, I hate your guts. And they just started throwing bombs in the middle of the ring. And then, oh, fuck, the Young Bucks are still here. Then we transition to taking them. And then they kind of get back in the flow of things by trying to one-up each other with the pile driver spot. And I thought the melodrama at the end was just a little too long. I would have liked it shortened up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, maybe be like, look up for like 3 seconds and then back off, instead of like the 10-ish that they did. But
yeah,
it was good. It was a good match. And it's hard to really complain about the Young Bucks and Okada and Takeshita having like a 4.5-star match. I also love the fact that Okada took the pin here.
And it made perfect sense with the, you know, the turn and all that, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious who's actually staying with the Don Callis family. Is it Takeshita or is it Okada? I think Okada being beaten is a good device, because now you can just be like, hey, the only reason Okada got beat is because Takeshita let him. So now Okada kind of has that out, and it keeps a little bit of that mystique. But when you book matches like this where you don't want the Bucks to lose because you're seemingly setting something up for a tag team title shot, but you also want to keep Takeshita and Okada strong, you have to be creative with finishes. And I think they did a great job.
Yeah, I thought this worked well. Like I said, I wasn't a huge fan of how melodramatic that ending was, but I do think that it wasn't to a destructive amount. You know, we're not talking about like the time Bryce Remsburg got killed by a sniper while counting to three. That's kind of my go, or like some of the more like the worst of the Adam Cole MJF, you know, I don't care, just be my friend, take the title, like that part kind of sucked several years ago. But yeah, I thought overall this worked well, and I thought the work in between was just phenomenal.
Great stuff. 4.5 stars. And
yeah, I was 4.75. And then it was followed by the returning, not Chris Jericho, just Jericho, against Ricochet. And
that fascinates me, Fred, because he's always so good at reinventing himself. Why is Chris gone? Like, my wheels are turning. Will it work? I don't know. But Chris Jericho's done a phenomenal job of keeping himself fresh with new ideas. So is he doing like a God complex kind of character? Is he doing another rock star gimmick? We don't know what this new Jericho is going to be, but I'm very intrigued to see his direction.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they're very much like, I have to think that they are kind of playing it a little slow here, just to see exactly what the reaction is going to be to Chris with his return. But so far it's worked, and I'll be honest, I thought this match rocked. I really like this match. I thought it was, I don't know, the last time we saw a Jericho performance this good. I thought Ricochet did a hell of a job with him. I just thought this rocked. I went 4.25 on it. I thought that Jericho looked fantastic, you know, relative to current expectations for Chris Jericho. And I thought Ricochet, I mean, you know, if you're not a particularly smart person, I guess I'll say, you might have the mindset that, that, you know, it's 2013 or something with, you know, Ricochet, and he's just some dumb high flyer who can't do anything else or whatever. He is a complete package these days. Like, he's really figured out how to present himself as a star and just carrying himself. He's a great heel, which is really saying something, because he is, you know, he's not what he once was as a high flyer, but he's still a very good high flyer when he's doing that stuff. Dare I say great. But like, that's not his main game now. And he's really evolved and has done it in a very interesting way. And I thought this match rocked.
It was great. 4 stars. I loved that Ricochet won with the Lion Salt.
Yeah,
I love
that Jericho lost too. That's New Japan style booking, you know. That's like, oh, this guy has been out injured forever. He's not going to be, you know, right back at top form, you know.
I thought it would be smart for Jericho to lose because you want to really kick in the idea that you need to keep Ricochet strong, and doing so is a really, really smart move on an overall level.
Mm-hmm.
Now Jericho has a lot of interesting things to do. Like, where does he go from here?
Is he going to turn heel? Is he, you know, like, I think he set himself up very well to be an intriguing character in AW. I am unsurprised to see this match at a 6.5 or 6.64, I should say, on AW, or I'm sorry, on Cage Match right now. Because they in particular hate Chris Jericho right now, but I thought this match was great, frankly.
4 stars. Just,
yeah, I went 4.25. So
I think people just have these blinders with Chris Jericho, and every so often wrestling fans as a whole get blinders behind certain people. Mm-hmm. It was blinders with Roman Reigns for a while, blinders with Will Ospreay seemingly forever.
Yeah.
Oh, he's still bad at selling. No, you just aren't paying attention anymore.
Well, Ospreay is very similar to Big John Studd.
You know what?
In this, in this SAI.
I have a lot of respect for Matt D of Segunda Caída, because there's a level of real thought-provoking analysis that goes into it. Like there's effort and stuff there, but I don't agree with a lot of the opinions, but I can at least come from, this is a ball knower genuinely putting an effort, not trying to be clickbaity bullshit. I thought that was really interesting, the comparison to Big John Studd. It's a very conceptual comparison. It's not a one-to-one, but yeah, definitely interesting. I also don't agree.
It's you can say anything on the internet. I thought this match was great. I think Jericho's set up to be very interesting going forward. Ricochet continues to be, like, if not a main event guy, like, just right outside of it, and can be elevated at any point whenever it is, like, time for Ricochet to be a main event heel. And I love this. Next up, speaking of stuff I loved, Andrade El Idolo and Darby Allin. Darby Allin is a ridiculous bump taker. This is not news, but almost every pay-per-view, like, there's a moment where I'm like, why did you do that? How, you know, and we had it again. I mean, he did the Samoa Joe dropkick on the stairs. Would not advise that to anyone ever. There was one, like, spot, was it like a suplex out of the ring or something, I think, that Andrade did to Darby, where Darby just looked like he would have just exploded into pieces, like when a minifig dies in one of the Lego Star Wars games.
The only one I can think of is when Andrade did the Los Ingobernables taunt in between the ropes, and Darby just flailed at him. But instead of like landing on him, he just kept going and then landed way farther.
Darby is, I honestly can't think of another person that is as intense on their dives in wrestling.
He is if Johnny Knoxville was good at professional wrestling.
I dare say that the Sami Zayn match was good, but not. I know what you're saying. But yeah, look, like
it was a celebrity gimmick match. But I'm talking if Johnny Knoxville was an actual wrestler, that's Darby Allin.
Yeah, like he is great. I mean, you know, I may talk to you about the Greatest Wrestler Ever project and how I'm trying to put together a ballot for that, and my various debates on different people for it.
Look, Darby, this is going to be controversial. You should have Darby in there.
Because I have him on there right now. Yeah,
good.
And I can't imagine dropping him, because you know we're at 7 years now of him on TV. Basically, his longest break was what, the Everest Expedition. You know,
that was like 4 or 6 months. Not a ton.
Yeah, he is amazingly consistent, and just great. I mean, frankly, a really dynamic worker. But I digress. This match was amazing. Andrade right now is, dare I say, at the best run of his career in terms of quality. Andrade also has a history of, you know, kind of, don't put on the internet that he gets mad, but he gets mad. And I am, you know, there's always that lingering concern that he's going to be come unhappy at some point and just be done. But right now he is so good. And he's just performing perfectly. And this match rocked. I saw a bunch of people going 5 on it. In fact, is it the highest rated match off the show on Cage Match right now? No, it is not. But it was great. I loved this match and thought it was phenomenal.
It was great. Andrade, when he cares, is really good.
Yeah.
I don't know how long he will stay caring.
Just got to enjoy it while it lasts, you know?
Look, he's working really well to his size. He's working really well to his character. He's not trying to do too much. I think he needs to calm down on the selfie spot, but I loved how they did it, where Darby just like looked at him like, what the fuck? And then he just dove right on his face.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
They had to do that. They had, if that was just to set up that and they kind of ease off it going forward, I'm happy. Cause that was an amazing spot. It's really great stuff. Yeah. And of course this match was, had the stipulation on it that if Darby won, he would get a world title match with MJF. And that is going to happen tomorrow night, as we record this, on Dynamite this week. And that is going to be a very intriguing result, because I think there's a real chance Darby Allin wins. They've been doing a lot of promos with him talking about how he has to prove himself to be a world champion. He, you know, hasn't won that yet, of course, and how that has been the big build with him. And I think it's a real possibility that this is the match that he does it in. I also think it's a real possibility that he loses and they just use that as fuel to kind of further that story and have him go another however many months or years before he does get the belt. But I think, you know, that could be a phenomenal match, and I'm looking forward to see what they do with it.
Yeah, I can't
quality,
wait.
Quality and result-wise, do you think Darby's going to win this week?
Yes, I do. It's too on the nose for him not to win, and it really is not going to impact MJF much at all. It feels like somebody else pointed this out, and I agree, that they're almost running a gimmick where MJF isn't supposed to know that he's facing Darby. almost like it's a surprise match, even though they promoted it. Like look, MJF can lose to Darby. It's not going to hinder him at all. Darby should drop the belt on Thursday, and he had the 1 day title reign. I mean, even if they did like 6 weeks where he drops a double or nothing, okay, whatever, who cares? Darby's not a guy that you want to hold the title for a while. It's the chase. And it feels like the right time to do it. Joe has always made the comparison that Tommy Dreamer should have never beat Raven. He even made the argument back in the day that MJF should not hold the world title for like a decade.
Yeah.
Because the whole idea is he's this tortured soul. Darby continues to win in a crafty way. He continues to beat people up, like punching higher than he should. And when it comes to MJF, they've been together in the company for 7 years. Study him, figure it out. I just think it makes too much sense for Darby to not win this belt. He's going to win. And I think it'll be a good thing from an overall storytelling perspective, because the only match he's ever had for the world title, to my knowledge, is the Four Pillars match. He's never had a one-on-one shot at the world title.
I think that is correct. Actually, I think there might have been a second one, but he's never had a singles match, like a straight singles.
He's had singles matches with world champions, because I think he had a match with Jericho. I know he's had a match with Mox, but I don't remember if that was for the title or not.
No, it was I want to say that may have been the International.
That very well could be. I think this is his first one-on-one shot at the world title, and I think this could be really, really good, Fred. I really do.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what exactly happens and what the result is. Let's see. The Mox Grand Slam match was a number one title or number one contender match. He said it was in like a Grand Slam Eliminator tournament. He had a world title match against Moxley on July 2020 Dynamite. And and that Jericho match was a Philadelphia Street Fight for the world title. So back in 2019. So it's been several years since he's had a pay-per-view. Actually, he's never had a pay-per-view world title match as a one-on-one, which doesn't apply here. I don't know why I said that, but this is his first one-on-one world title match since 2020, so almost 6 years now, which is crazy to say out loud. I think that'll be a huge match. Obviously it's a huge match. I'm very excited to see what they do with it and to see how it goes. Next match on the card was the world tag team title match between Adam Copeland and Christian Cage challenging FTR. I will admit that every time Adam Copeland has a match these days, I am concerned about just how much bad WWE Edge stuff we're going to get. But it was pretty light here. I really can't point to a single spot I can think of that was along those lines. And I thought this was a really great match. I thought FTR is having the past several years, they've been phenomenal. And I think that Christian did a good job here selling his arm. And I think Copeland did well as the fiery baby face. And I thought this was a 4.25 match.
I loved that they didn't put Cope and Christian over. I love that they chose to put over FTR here. I thought they would work more of the arm over, Fred.
Mm-hmm.
For Christian, but once they got him out, like Cope tried, then they just put him away.
Yeah,
I love that. It's simple storytelling, and it was good work. It didn't get too over melodrama-y, which is always a worry with Cope. It was just a really good wrestling match with really good psychology and work. It was great. I'm very excited to see what goes on next. I think there's a lot of different ways you can take this. The most likely situation is Wembley is probably a TLC match. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But this has been really fun, and I'm really, really excited the fact that we got a really good match out of these guys. a gimmicked up match, just a really good wrestling match. And good, Cope and Christian don't exactly have a lot of really good wrestling matches in their resume. This might be the best one they've ever had.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I'm actually going to pull up their listing on Cage Match right now just to see what exactly, what options do you have. That's a steel cage match. It might be that their highest rated non-gimmick match is a, and you know, debatable if you want to count this or not, of course, but a handicap match against The Rock on a 2000 SmackDown. But if you don't count that, then the highest rated one is the FDR one we just had. So everything else is TLC or ladders or steel cage. So as good of an option as anything else, I think.
Yeah. And I will say one of the tough parts is, and I think you and I talked about it when we had Suit on the other day, where I was worried that the original ladder match between Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels didn't hold up, and it did. Mm-hmm. I watched the TLC 2 from WrestleMania X7. Mm-hmm. That holds up.
Yeah.
It's still really good. So
no, that match rocks. It does. I'm not going to take anything away from that match at all. It still is insane. just a great, crazy match. I love this FTR heel act with Stokely Hathaway. It is perfect. There's going to be a point where they need to break it up, I guess. But like, we're nowhere near that right now, you know.
Break up who?
The FTR Stokely Hathaway act.
No, never. Don't ever do
it. I honestly, at this point, if you ask me, I would say never. Like, they should do it for the rest of their lives. But
here's the interesting thing, because oftentimes you put a good talking manager with a group that doesn't have good talkers. Dax and Cash are good talkers.
They are. No,
they don't need Stokely, but it works so well.
It's like the old Bobby Heenan, Nick Bockwinkel pairing, you know? I mean, Bockwinkel was a great promo, and Heenan obviously is maybe the best talking manager of all time, but, you know, they amplified each other, you know, and that's how it works sometimes. I think Stoke adds a lot to this act. I think they work great together, and I just think it's a blast. I just love them. They're fantastic, just dirtbag heels, and it's always amazing to get to watch them, you know, do their stuff.
100%.
Next up was the Casino Gauntlet match for the AEW TNT Championship. Kevin Knight won that match involving one of these things that's not like the other. Anthony Bowens, Bandido, Daniel Garcia, El Clone, Mike Bailey, Pac, Roosh, Tommaso Ciampa, and Wheeler Yuta. I thought this was fun enough. Went a little long for my tastes, but I went 4 stars on it. I mean, it was just kind of a fun multi-man match in a way that doesn't, like, kind of, you know, feel like it's been done a zillion times. I like the Kevin Knight win. I think Knight is a big rising star in this company, obviously. I think he's doing phenomenal work, and I'm happy to see him with the belt.
Yeah, I think it's noteworthy that the finish happened involving Speedball.
Yeah.
This is a happy accident. The accident being the injury to Kyle Fletcher. You don't want to see that happen. You don't want to see one of your emerging stars take a back seat like that. But at the end of the day, they did a really good job of trying to make the best out of a bad situation. And Kevin Knight was ready for a singles push of some kind. And this is a way to kind of get there. I'm really excited to see how they're going to end up helping him grow and develop. I'm excited to see what he does with this title and how they book it. Honestly, this is the kind of situation where I would just make this a legitimate television title. You remember, it was the beginning of the Hulk Hogan era in TNA where D-Von became the TV champion. He defended it every single week on television. Maybe don't call it a gimmick like that, but maybe do the gimmick and just put him in there with Roderick Strong, put him in there with Claudio Castagnoli, which I think they're doing, put him in there with Mark Davis, put him in there with all these guys. Like, you know what? Just make him through the run through the lower level of the Don Callis family because you took the belt from a Don Callis family member. Easy story. Get like five matches out of it. Work against some different types of people and grow and develop. This is a great opportunity to continue the ascension of Kevin Knight without making him a humongous part of your short-term plans. Like, this is an incredible happy accident. And that might not be the right way to frame it, but everybody understands what I mean. This wasn't supposed to happen, but you're making the best of it.
Yeah, the benefit of a wrestler going out is, you know, it gives you an opportunity to push someone else and establish them. And then when the wrestler that is left, if it's an injury, is back, then you can have them face each other and you've established another guy and just boosted that match and your company overall. Because after Kevin Knight, you know, assuming Kevin Knight has a nice run with his belt and gets some nice wins, you know, even if Kyle Fletcher comes back and immediately beats him, at least Kevin Knight has been established as a guy, you know, at that level. And, let's bully Triple H a little bit here because he, you know, that's always fun. Apparently he did an interview with Joe Tessitore today. And Sean Ross Sapp is the one that put this quote out there. I'm just going to read this verbatim and then I'll talk about it a little after. Triple H said, the other thing about our business is unlike a sport, and as bad as it is, if you lose your starting quarter, you lose your quarterback, if you lose your first string offensive lineman, if you lose your star center or star guard in the NBA, you have a second string guy to back him up, and you have you hope that those second string guys are pretty good. There's no backup Cody Rhodes, there's no backup Randy Orton, there's no backup Roman Reigns, there's no backup CM Punk. Now, I'm going to give him a bit of grace here in that I think he's just trying to put over how big of a star those guys are, right? And maybe didn't exactly phrase it the smartest way. But I think the laughable thing here is if Cody Rhodes or Randy Orton or Roman Reigns or CM Punk went out here, then they could put someone else in that spot. And if it's like Sami Zayn or... you know, someone younger down the card like Carmelo Hayes or Trick Williams, then at least you are giving those guys an opportunity to shine and potentially giving yourself another star. And I think that this quote is really kind of a big difference between what wrestling can be, because we, you know, with the Kevin Knight situation is kind of the counterpoint to this Levesque quote, but also over in New Japan, they've lost a bunch of talent pretty rapidly. You know, Will Ospreay, David Finlay, Gabe Kidd, Evil, Hiromu, apparently Sanada, Tetsuya Naito, Tanahashi retired, Kazuchika Okada a couple years back now, and so on and so forth. And what is happening in New Japan right now? Well, Yota Tsuji just had a nice world title run. Callum Newman is the youngest IWGP heavyweight champion of all time. Shoto Amino is getting some shine. And granted, I think that, you know, maybe he's not the best option to use here by me, but it's still like, you know, showing some stuff and looking pretty promising at points, and then at other points, maybe less so. But I mean, Yuya Uemura, Ryohei Oiwa, Oleg Bolton, so on and so forth. I mean, you know, I've been clowning on New Japan for years for failing to elevate younger guys. They're doing that now. I can no longer go back to that old joke. And it's all because people left and they had to go to the next guy. And in addition to that, like Zack Sabre Jr. and Hirooki Goto have been made world champions and have been given that kind of credence because of that. And that's because you do fill that spot. You know, there is no other Hiroshi Tanahashi, sure, but like with Hiroshi Tanahashi out of the way, you can now, you know, make Yota Tsuji a star or Callum Newman a star. And the thing with that list of people that Levesque had is it is an old list. Those guys are like Randy Orton's been around forever. Roman Reigns is, I think, the youngest of that bunch. And he's still like 40 and has a foot out the door to try to be an actor with his veneers. CM Punk is old. I mean, frankly, I mean, he was showing signs of age at his last AEW run before he left. I mean, I think overall he's been pretty good in WWE, but still, like you can't It's really interesting to see this kind of change in the industry, you know, to where older guys can stick around and do stick around longer because, you know, growing up with in the mid 90s, you know, we had Vince McMahon making fun of WCW for being so old because they signed like late 30s, maybe early 40s, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, you know, and so on and so forth. Ric Flair in his mid 40s. And now that's just the main event scene in WWE and also to some extent AEW, but less so, I guess. I just thought that was really interesting and a good chance to be like, hey, Paul Levesque, kind of dumb.
Yeah. If he would have just said quarterback.
Yeah.
Okay. I think there's more of a pass, but he went a little too in-depth. And then he used four guys. Look, you should always be building up the next generation. You should always have somebody ready to take a spot. Even if you hold them steady at the upper mid-card level for maybe a little longer than you'd like, just because of what you have available to you.
Yeah.
He buried the living shit out of himself. And Tony Khan would never do that. He would just be like, you know what? We're missing Kenny. We're missing MJF because they're hurt, but Kyle Fletcher's ready to burst out at any second. You've got Kevin Knight, who's been on a tear. Ricochet's been over like crazy. Like, he's going to talk about so many guys on his roster. And he couldn't even mention Gunther, who you had retire Goldberg and John Cena. He's a clown.
It's Triple H is not a clown. Did not come off great here. He's kind of a goober. Triple H, but yeah, I just thought it was an interesting dichotomy because, you know, we maybe wound our way making, you know, Kevin Knight a dude because of this Kyle Fletcher injury. And that's kind of how the wrestling industry works, you know, to its benefit. Anyways, digression over. Apologies to anyone that was annoyed by that. But up next, we have Jamie Hayter against Tekla. Tekla, God, put the Appalachian on that one. Tekla. For the AEW Women's World title. Very strong match, I thought. I love Tekla. And Jamie Hayter is a fantastic in-ring wrestler. And I thought they put on a really good match here. I went 4.25, I think, on it. But I thought that everyone came off great here. I liked the end with Tekla being a heel and doing heel stuff to get the win. Jamie Hayter just being a great, like, I'm a baby face and I'm going to hit people in the face until I win. And I love that about her.
It's tremendous. I gave this 4.25. Look, this women's division is different than anything else we're really getting across the world. And it's why I'm so excited about watching it all the time. Willow and Camille, that's going to depend a lot on Camille and how well she works this match. Cause we know Willow's going to be great. But if Camille can ever take that step, man.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by that match. I'm very excited to see exactly what happens with it, you know?
Look, we talk about big, meaty men slapping meat. Well, use that phrase to talk about what this match could be. And I don't know how to say that PC, so I'm just not going to say it. But just beat the shit out of each other. Let's go. Throw bombs. Throw huge suplexes. Make this a King's Road kind of match. That's what I want. I want this women's division can be so different from anything else in the world because they have the women to do it. And I'm really, 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 really excited for the future. And you know what? Tekla, she has a different energy than everybody else on this roster, other than Clark Connors, which we'll get to. But man, it's pretty remarkable. It's pretty remarkable, man.
Yeah, it is. She is a special character. She is a good worker. I don't know if she's like just in a better environment for her than Stardom, or if she's just in AEW being more personality driven. I don't know if that is a superior option for her, but like I she is in a great spot right now, and I think she's doing phenomenal as a world champion, and I'm very glad she has joined AEW, and I'm glad she's here and in this spot because I think she's killing it.
Yeah.
Speaking of killing it, my favorite match of the night, Will Ospreay challenging unsuccessfully Jon Moxley for the AEW Continental Championship. Maybe we need to write a companion piece for that VOW Young Bucks article. Is Will Ospreay the greatest wrestler of all time?
Red. I don't remember how long ago it was.
It was like a year ago or so.
I came on here and said, I think Will Ospreay is the greatest wrestler of all time. Yes. 100% yes.
I think I still favor Bryan Danielson, but my God, and Jon Moxley is people need to wake up on him, like, as far as historical greatness. Like, he's an old timer, and he's on an all time run. This AEW run for him has been amazing. And I mean, Will Ospreay is just great. And this was a phenomenal match. It went 5 1/4. It broke the scale. Anyone that gets mad about that, I do not care. I just loved this so much. Really intense match. I like that it was a tidy 16 and a half minutes, and that, or 18, I'm sorry, 18, just over 18. It didn't need to be any longer. It was amazing. Moxley is such an intense individual, such an intense worker. And Ospreay, I mean, he has developed so many aspects to his game in the last decade. And it's really insane just to see people, you know, like, act like it's still 2014. Will Ospreay, where he can only do flips or whatever. Like, he's so obviously evolved since then. And, you know, there's people that just don't pay any attention. You know, they don't know what they're talking about, but they're willing to talk about it. And, God, these guys are great. And this match was great. And I love this. I don't think you can go wrong with, like, a best match on this show. Like, there's four options, really. But this was mine. And I just love this so much.
Five stars. Five stars unequivocally. I loved, and we talked about this when MJF beat Hangman, and I talked about how you're going to get Hangman back in the world title picture, and it's going to be babyface bravado from Will Ospreay. And that's what you got here. Mm-hmm. Because right away, he just wants to kick his ass, and you see that fire in his eyes. And then he hits the Hidden Blade right away and just stands over him. And then he goes to the ref and's like, how much time left do I got? And he just wants to beat the living shit out of him. And that's all he's focused on.
Great. I love that spot open. Yeah, as an opener. Yeah.
And it's just, I'm not trying to win a wrestling match. I'm trying to kill you. And that playing into the fact that he ended up losing the match, I thought was huge. Because now you have an out for Will Ospreay, because he's just so focused on getting his revenge, that he lost sight of the bigger picture, which is the best way to get revenge is to win.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a perfect way to do this match. It was physical. It was brutal. It was violent. Everybody's talking about that Will Ospreay Death Rider spot where he kind of pops up and then hits the Hidden Blade. I mean, if you can't understand that, then you're just an idiot.
Yeah. It's just a momentum, you know, not physical, you know, momentum, but like, you know, a fighting spirit spot, you know?
Yeah.
And I understand that's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, and I'm not going to really rip on anyone that is genuinely offended by that. I just think a lot of it is like performative, you know, like, oh, this guy doesn't sell, you know, and that kind of nonsense. God, this match rolled. I love this match. It was so great. Ospreay, right now on my, you know, mentioned it again, my greatest wrestler ever ballot, number two right now. Moxley is somewhere in my top 50. And every time I watch him, I'm just like, I got to move this guy up.
Man, can you imagine how good Moxley would have been in some other eras?
He would have been. Can you imagine him like, you know, the Bruiser Brody feud or Stan Hansen matches? Like, that stuff would have rocked, you know.
Look, this whole thing, Ospreay is so good. at everything he does. And if his name was Steve Smith, he would not be getting the same criticism he is. Look, he said some stupid things, but nothing cancelable, just stupid, because he was immature. And guess what? When you're young and immature, you're in, like, you just say idiotic things. You and I have both done it. Everybody in this world has done it. And Ospreay has seemed to have learned and grown and matured, and he's 31 years old right now. I think he deserves a little bit of grace, because we'd want that kind of grace if we said something kind of moronic, but not like you're canceled kind of thing. That's, people just need to calm down on Ospreay. One of the best wrestlers to have ever lived. In my mind, he's the best wrestler that's ever lived. It's crazy. He thinks about it. He's a ball knower. Everything matters to him. It's a more modern day world than somebody like a Jerry Lawler was working in, where you're doing flippy doos, you're doing hyper athletic stuff, but he keeps the core concepts packed. That matters to him. That has to be a factor here. I'm sorry, but we could just talk on and on and on and on and on about this, and we may just be higher on him than most people, but I think Will Ospreay is the best wrestler of all time. And I think sometimes we just have such reverence for other people in this industry that we're not actually willing to look forward and see that somebody else might actually be better, and that's where I think we're at with Will Ospreay.
Yeah, now going back a little bit to what you said about him saying stupid stuff, I do think it's very fair to criticize him for, and I don't want to get into the subject in full, but the whole having Paul Robinson as a producer for Eve, I think is a fair thing to criticize him for, given all that stuff. But since that happened like a month ago.
What did Paul Robinson do to get canceled?
I think it was something to do with speaking out. Do not hold me to that. If I'm wrong, I am sorry.
So many people got canceled from stuff. I don't remember who got canceled for what. So yeah,
I just remember it was definitely regarding speaking out. But I can't speak to the specifics of it offhand, unfortunately. I am under the impression that it might have had something to do with a underage woman. But I don't know more than that. Anyways, I think that's a fair point of criticism of Will Ospreay, and I will say that. Going on with the show review, we had the AEW World Trios match where Clark Connors, David Finlay, and Gabe Kidd faced off against the reunited conglomeration Kyle O'Reilly, Orange Cassidy, and Roderick Strong, with the babyfaces taking the belts. What did you think of the entrance, Tyler?
Look, the conglomeration bit was apparently I can't remember his name. His name is Bo, friend of Luther Brody King's.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an homage to him in some way. I don't remember what the connection was, but it was included in the whole conversation. So I thought it was kind of lame, but you know what? I can take away the fact that I thought it was lame. You know what? It was an homage to a fallen comrade. No problem with it. I don't have to like it to think it's really cool and respect it. But what Clark Connors did, he sees the couch and he drops his belt and he thrusts at it. Dude, Clark Connors is awesome. Like, Clark Connors is peak dumb jock wrestler. He's also the kind of wrestler that you should push because he's been incredibly underexposed to the American audience.
Yeah.
Push him and just let his that natural sexual charisma come out. You don't even have to have him tell him to do anything. Just be like, dude, just go. Hell yeah.
Yeah, that rocked. I think that he is there's a possibility that of these three, of Finlay, Kidd, and Connors, that Connors will be the biggest star of the three. And I don't know, I would have said that a year ago, but I thought that he's been great since he came out. I think that yeah, this rocked. Unfortunate about the Gabe Kidd injury. Easiestly the weakest match on the show, the main show. And I thought it was like 3.5 stars. I thought it was, you know, still like, I mean, respectably good. But the injury hurt it, of course, and they did their best to cover up for it. But yeah.
Good match. It was obviously only on there for one reason. They wanted to get a Kyle O'Reilly pop for British Columbia. All right, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But it didn't need to be on the match. Like, this is my biggest criticism of Tony Khan pay-per-views. There's always one match where it's like, you just don't need to have this on there. You just don't need it. And East Coasters are starting to get a little frustrated about the time. Personally, I don't have an issue with staying up till 11:30 for a pay-per-view, but I'm Central Time Zone. That's 12:30 for them. So I kind of get it. Yeah. Just a perfunctory quick title change.
Yeah, I watched this during the day on Monday, just because I was doing something Sunday night, and I was like, yeah, you know what? I ain't staying up that late. So I think that worked out to my benefit. But yeah, anyone who is like, they could have just cut this, you're right, frankly. And then our main event, Kenny Omega, MJF, in what I thought was a really strong match. MJF, and I mean, obviously Omega just put on two great performances and resulted in a great match. Maybe a bit overlong, but honestly, it didn't feel like it was 38 minutes, which is one of the best things you can say about any long match, is it didn't feel its length. And
really? Man, yeah, I disagree.
Okay, go ahead.
I thought it was too long. I'm going to be honest. I don't think Kenny and MJF have chemistry. I don't. I think they just, it's oil and water. They're both great. They both should be treated like they're great. But I really just don't think that they should wrestle again. It just doesn't work. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the deal was, but I thought this could have been like a 4.5 to 5-star match on the paper, on the surface. That was one of the worst 4-star matches I've ever seen as far as like how I felt coming out of it. So disappointing. It just felt clunky and performative rather than like they kind of understood each other and understood how their movements and stuff. It just didn't work.
I thought it, I liked it a lot.
Well, who cares about your opinion, Fred?
How dare you? How dare you? Yeah, I thought it was a great match, frankly. I thought they worked really well. I thought it was the work was intense. I thought it were, you know, flowed well for the most part. And yeah, I thought it was a really great match, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I just didn't think it ever got there, which is what it is.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what they do going forward with Omega, since they're clearly going to shift him out of the title picture for a bit. Is he going to take some time off? Or what? But, you know, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it will be. I still hope we somehow get Omega Ospreay at Wembley, because I think they will just do some bonkers stuff. I don't want it to be MJF and Ospreay. No offense to MJF. I want to see Ospreay Omega one more time before Omega just has to really tone it down, because he's already lost some of the crispness in his movements, the explosiveness in his athleticism, but some of it's still there. And I hope we get one more.
Yeah, you know, obviously, whatever we can get out of Omega, you know, as long as he's healthy enough to do it, is just great, you know. And hopefully we can get that from him, you know.
I agree. Anything else you got, Fred?
No, that's it for me this week. We will be back next week to talk about probably whatever happens on Dynamite, and maybe we'll do it after the next episode as well, just to have a little more to talk about. But yeah, I thought this was a really fantastic pay-per-view. Strong main event. Don't care what Tyler says. And strong recommendation on it.
I would still recommend everybody go watch it. But what's fascinating to me is this show was so good top to bottom, and it's an average AEW pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's right in the middle of the ratings on Cage Match, which is crazy.
Insane.
All right, well, everyone, thanks for listening. For Tyler, I'm Fred. Hope you all have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.